I'm Erin Dinkins. We have with us tonight Doc Waterman. Hi, Doc.
Can you hear me?
Ah, there you are. Good evening.
That was the second hello. The other one is lost in the internet, wandering around.
It's floating through the ether as we speak. Okay. That's right. It's okay. We need a little humor tonight, man. I'm telling you, those documentaries I watched got me in a foul mood. Anyway, all right. We have with us tonight, one, Phil Hudock, and then we have Gene Stalnecker. And the topic tonight is Waco. And I think we all have different opinions about why Waco is important and why it does need to be revisited. And we're going to be revisiting 911, too, this month. Why? Because incidents like Waco, Ruby Ridge, Oklahoma City, 911, on and on and on it seems to go. The list is endless. As you start to wake up and go down these rabbit holes, all of these incidents had a role in playing determining the chessboard as it sits now on what we're going through now. And when you realize the lengths that these things will go through to lie, steal, cheat, murder, it's no wonder. It's no wonder we're where we are today. And it leads me to believe that it's going to get so much worse.
Well, the whole thing about this is if the militia didn't have guns, this wouldn't have happened. Really, it wouldn't have happened. Waco was about getting accomplished what they finally got accomplished with 911. They tried doing this in a little bit smaller way. They were trying to demonize Randy Weaver, okay? They made him the devil in disguise, you know? But it went so crooked and messed up. And, of course, you know, the person that murdered, the sniper that literally murdered and shot in the back, kids, babies, and mothers, unarmed, is also who showed up at Waco. This operation, Erin, is an agenda, and it's been an agenda to disarm America because, guess what? It's kind of hard to be a dictator when the populace is armed.
And let's keep it that way, okay, shall we?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phil, Gene, say hello.
Hello, Erin.
How are you guys tonight?
Doing is pretty well. Pretty. I'm making it. Let's put it that way. It's been a roller coaster ride for several months, and the last couple of days with working with trying to expedite Thomas's release from jail has been interesting. But it was the Waco raid was titled Operation Showtime, and that's exactly what it was. It was had several purposes. I believe one was to get a budget increase for the BATF, which it did.
F troop.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they got several hundred million dollar budget increase following Waco. They should have been defunded, actually, but you know, the more government messes up, the more they say we need money to make it work. Well, it doesn't work, or it works to your disadvantage, I guess it would be a better way to put it. But
they get rewarded for fumbling. That's great.
Right, right. And it was a wake-up call for me. Waco was wake-up, and I was teaching school the day it happened. I had a classroom of seventh graders who had been brainwashed to the extent that they wanted to see burning people come out of that building because we happened to have a TV, and I was alerted about what.
Oh, they wanted to burning up that were the bad people, huh? Is that what you mean?
Right, the bad people inside. They wanted to see them on fire.
Oh God!
And that made me so sick. I had to leave the room. I've never felt a sickness like that. You know how sometimes you have a feeling in the pit of your stomach? Well, this was a whole body experience. Yeah.
As a teacher, That was that, don't you believe that as a teacher of that age student, that really it reflects maybe even a position or an attitude or an opinion from home?
I think they get it at home, but they get it mainly through the media, you know, through glamorizing that they see on the media, things that weren't glamorized when I was a child, you know.
I guess I said it wrong.
Zionist propaganda that just bombards these kids and adults.
I guess I should have said it this way. What they get at home is what their parents have them watch, which is exactly where you went. You went straight to the media with that. And so the parents and the student are watching the same opinion or propaganda, right?
Correct.
And so that, you know, that tells me that unless some of these students go, well, when it happens, you're not going to have an opinion from home yet, I guess. But right off the bat, if they think it's on media, they have the same opinion. Now, unless they have parents that say the media lies all the time, they're going to think the media is telling the truth. So how many of them didn't believe it, that thought it was bad? Were there any at all?
I didn't hear anyone protest the students that wanted to see someone on fire, whether it's peer pressure, bad. You know, since the majority were, you know, wanting to see that. I don't know. I think
that's disappointing.
At that age, you know, peer pressure is very important. And, you know, you go with the majority. The very few people actually, you know, they dress to show that they're different, but they all dress the same to show that they're different.
Right. That's a good way to put it, Phil. Yeah.
Right.
Now, Gene, were you awake when Waco happened, Gene, or were you? I was still asleep, so yeah, I was big time.
Probably 70s.
He's getting as old as I am.
I'm getting up there. I was involved in the textbook protest in Kanawha County.
Oh, you were.
Yeah, in the 70s there.
So you know about that, Aaron? Do you know about that?
I do a little bit. It might be another show, Doc. Don't ruin it.
Okay, I won't.
Because that's an interesting topic that I don't think a lot of people know about. That's right.
Oh, I tell you, you got to watch what they do with those textbooks. Every year.
They use them as weapons.
Well, yeah, that's true. Go ahead. We're sorry.
I didn't
Go
say
ahead,
that.
Yeah, well, that's basically about when I started, was in the 70s, I started writing different congressmen and officials and stuff about the Constitution. I was seeing so many things that I would think, what are they doing this for? You know, that's not legal. So back then, that's about the extent of my participation, other than in the textbook protest. I would write letters to different officials, question the constitutionality, and don't ever write a judge. They don't answer you.
Well, no. Well, now, Gene, let me ask you this. Since you were a little bit awake then, when you saw Waco as it progressed, this went on for a long time, as this progressed, were you aware of the propaganda, the way they were painting the Branch Davidians?
Oh,
did
yeah.
you understand all that, the nuances?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
And the innuendo?
Well, they
because,
wanted
you
to
know,
make, they wanted to make example of these people who wanted to be left alone.
Well, it's true.
Right.
But you know, the thing is, guys, as I've looked into this more and more since I've been awake, those people there, the Branch Davidians, including David Koresh or, you know, Vernon Howell, whatever you want to call him, they sound an awful lot like we do.
Yes.
Now, how many of us, Doc, because you and I talk about this all the time, have said we wish we had some land where we could all put our little houses on it and work as a community or a village together and be neighbors and fellowship and help each other grow gardens and our own food and be sustaining. We're the same. Let that sink into the listeners for a little bit.
Gene and Phil, what I'm interested in hearing from you guys are the multitude of agendas within agendas or plan within plan. You know how they always say, don't let a good opportunity escape you, you know, or disaster or whatever you get going. But the overall agenda, I would love to hear what you're thinking, what you have found out the overall agenda was. And I'm sure that you're aware of lots of other agendas within this to take care of some other problems that had to be taken care of from high up. And I think that they saw an opportunity here to use this event as an excuse to take care of some of that. How much of this can you describe to us? Tell us exactly where you're going and what you think the agenda, what was this event is goal? Where do you see the goal being?
Okay, let me start. Since this was 22 years ago, just lay a background of when this happened and just kind of a general picture here. But this was 22 years ago, and it started on February 28th with a raid that was actually planned the year before. Okay, it was a dynamic entry raid, which means you go in with guns, you charge. It's kind of like taking a fort or a hill or some piece of ground from your enemy. So they went in on February 28th.
Hold that thought right there, Phil, they went in. Okay, we'll get right back to that. We have Phil Hudock, Gene Stelnecker, and Doc Waterman. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We have with us Doc Waterman, Gene Stelnecker, and Phil Hudock. Now, find information about Phil and Gene and what they're doing in West Virginia at hudock.info. That's hudok.info or .com. Phil also has a YouTube channel under Philip Hudock. I know that's odd, right? Now, the movies, the two documentaries that are excellent that Phil has posted are Waco, The Beginning, and Waco, What Happened. So check those out, listeners. It's well worth your time. Now, Phil, right before the break, you said go in, or you were somewhere around
there. Right. This was a 51-day siege. It was the longest shootout and in law enforcement history, and it was the worst episode ever in law enforcement. And basically, you had a sect of Seventh-day Adventists from all over the world, some from England, some from Australia. And the government had decided that they were going to do a raid because they first said, and they changed the deal, they first said that the Branch Davidians had illegal guns. Interestingly, the Branch Davidians quite often shot with the local sheriff. He participated with them and actually thought that they were good people. But on that first day of the siege, February 28th, 1993, four agents and six Davidians were killed. And then after the 51 days, there was a terrible fire on April 19th, 1993, which is the same day, I think, that the Murrah building was bombed. And well, it was actually bombed after the Waco incident on the same day. But about 79 men, women, and children died with some very suspicious circumstances. And, you know, I think number one, they like to demonize religion. So this was a religious crazy group. They could demonize guns and gun ownership and people wanting and enjoying having guns, okay, and self-defense. They, at one point, decided to change the what they had gone in for, what they were staying for, and that was that there was supposedly a meth lab, but that was totally made up. And then the children, I think at one point they changed the that the Branch Davidians were so terrible was how they were treating their children. And amazingly, when some of the children were released, the Child Protective Services was amazed at their health, their intelligence. As a matter of fact, I can remember I was watching TV, and they broke in with a special presentation. I think it was CNN, I'm not sure. But it was a psychologist who was giving what they had found in studying the children. And so this was a more extensive report on the health of the children. And he was saying, wow, you know, with considering what these children have gone through, a lot of their parents are dead and everything. He said, they're doing amazingly well. And he started to continue, and all of a sudden, the sound went off. And his lips were moving, but you couldn't hear anything. Okay? And, of course, then they had to switch channels. It's kind of like when Saddam Hussein, a lot of people know this, but Saddam Hussein one time wanted to address the country before we went into Iraq. And he actually was on, major network television, and they decided to switch during his message to a sports game because they didn't like what he was saying. So, you know, but I think it's that, and also it's supposed to be futile to resist the government, and they want to show that they're like God, they have control, they have power. And then they got to play with their psychological operations. I'm sure they did some testing of different techniques. They used sound. They used light. They played Petula Clark. These boots are made for walking. They're going to walk all over you. Enough to keep the people that they couldn't, you know, keep them up at night. They said it was extremely hard on the children. So, you know, it's multi-purpose, I believe. And I think those are some of the major reasons.
Well, you know, one thing I noticed when they would give like press releases about when the whole thing was going on, and they really mocked God.
Yes, yes,
the FBI did. The ATF, they mocked God. In other words, the Branch Davidians are crazy for believing in God or saying that God's giving them directions. They totally mocked God. I think that was part of it, too. Bring that out in the media. Mock God. It's a laughing matter. God doesn't matter. God's dead. That kind of thing. Guys, we'll be right back after this. And we're back with Phil Hudock, Gene Snelliger, and Doc. We're discussing Waco. Who wants to add to the agenda? Anybody have anything else to add to what the agenda is and the ulterior motives were for this whole debacle?
I have another one that was pointed out in the videos. Have you ever heard of cognitive dissonance?
Oh, yes.
It's kind of like where you have two opposing things. And what happened in Waco was they kept changing the deal. They would tell the Branch Davidians, well, here's the deal. And then they'd say, well, you know, the tactical team or the negotiating team or whoever has changed the plan. At one point they said, because the negotiations have been going so well, we're going to leave your electricity on. A couple hours later, they turned it off for good, you know. So it was like they never knew what to expect. And a good example of that is how the Russians view Pavlov's dog experiment as compared to Americans. For Americans, it's if you turn the light on and feed the dog, well, then if you turn the light on, the dog will automatically salivate because you've conditioned him that he's going to get a reward when you turn the light on, okay? But I understand to the Russians, it went further than that. Pavlov did a second conditioning experiment where he would turn a light on. He'd have a dark room, he'd turn a light on, and he would take a stick and hit the dog. So this was punishment. This was a negative reinforcement. So, you know, turn the light on, hit the dog. Well, pretty soon the dog was always trying to get away from the person who had the stick when the light came on. Now, if the bell rang, the dog would be happy and salivate. What happens when you ring the bell and turn the light on? Does the dog salivate? No. Does he run away? No. He stands there and shakes because he doesn't know whether he's going to get a reward or he's going to be punished. So right. when you have a system where you're told opposing things all the time, this is good for you, no, it's bad for you. The government's good, the government's bad. They give you conflicting things and give you put you in a state where you don't know what to think, so you become somewhat like comatose or non-thinking, and you just give up. You say, "Well, I can't figure it out."
That's kind of like in medicine, where the fear of the unknown is the worst. When people are sick, they often say, "I just wished I knew what was wrong." And the fear of the unknown sometimes is more horrible. And once they know what's wrong, they at least go, well, at least now we know, right? And, you know, like you were saying, that dog at least at one point, even being beat, knew what was coming.
Right.
But then once he was put into a position of fearing or having not knowing what was coming, the fear of the unknown is actually much more abusive psychologically, very terrifying because you don't know. And so that's exactly what they were doing. They weren't trying to do anything except terrify.
Yes.
But not just them, they were terrifying the viewers too. I mean, this was an incredible feat of multiple layers of activity, and I'm really interested. I'm going to add some stuff in a little while to this scenario that you may or may not know. One, I'm pretty sure you don't know about, because I had to go out of the country to get the info. So as we're marching along here with this story, you're saying that they got attacked, right?
Right.
I'd like to start getting into, you know, this whole story you said was multiple reasons, changed several times, but who shot first?
That's a good question, especially since there were actually, and this the BATF says, there were three or four cameras pointed at the front door at the very beginning, and the tapes disappeared, as did a lot of things. A lot of notes disappeared. Evidence in the evidence locker disappeared. And the front door, which is metal, which will tell you definitely which way a bullet is going.
That's right.
The front doors disappeared, and they wouldn't have been consumed by the fire. They were metal doors.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, they kept saying throughout all of the investigations that the FBI and the ATF never fired a shot. How many times do we hear that?
Well, and we know that's not true, because the man who invented forward-looking infrared, it's called FLIR photography, forward-looking infrared, he analyzed the footage, the video footage that was taken by a military plane about a mile or even more in the air during the entire April 19th burning of the church. And they called it a compound. That's another thing they did all the time. Well, it's a compound. It was a church. Why a compound? Well, you know, yeah, they had a records vault where the women and children tried to hide at the very end, which General Parton, who was head of Air Force Ordnance, explosives, he said that there was definitely a shape charge put on the top of that, which blew a hole through the concrete reinforced records vault, and the evidence inside was that this shrapnel would have killed anyone instantly inside, because as Ben Parton said, this was to ensure that there would be no survivors, and they didn't want any survivors. But that forward-looking infrared was analyzed by the foremost authority in the country, and he said there was definitely multiple automatic weapons fire into the building behind tanks as they were tearing the building down, which they said they were saying this is not an assault, as they're punching holes in the building, knocking walls down, inserting CS gas, which is worse than tear gas, And it was on the windiest day of the year, and when the fire department, and that was the first day the fire department was told not to be there.
Right.
And when they did come after the fire started, the BATF, FBI, they wouldn't even let them go near the church. Again, I almost say compound because that's what they called it over and over and over again. But it was a church. And so, you know, they fired into it. And this man, his name is Allard, he also had video footage with infrared photography showing a helicopter firing at a man, or actually there were three men, that one man started to leave the compound and they launched a helicopter and it immediately took position and there was automatic weapons fire. So, you know, they never did do any forensics because, number one, they forgot to keep the electricity on in the two containers, the two buildings where they were housing the bodies, so they deteriorated to the point that they were of very little forensic value, and they had decided already that the people who died inside by gunshot wounds had to be killed by their own people, you know, either committing suicide or homicide from inside the building. So they never did any ballistics of any of the guns of the government. You know, it was determined. It was outcome based. It was an outcome based raid.
Well, would you say that a majority of the population still believes that it was like at the very end when the fire was going that it was a suicide, like Guyana?
I certainly don't believe it.
I don't either.
Yeah, but I think it's not even in most people's consciousness anymore. And a lot of people today, you know, they're less than, if they're under, say, what, 30 years old, they were only 8 years old when it happened, even.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but we need, that's why I put these videos up. I wanted to show what the government is capable of doing, and we need to realize that no one paid a price for that. And at one point in one of the videos, you know, a person says, we have to, you know, this was terrible, this was a tragedy, and there were mistakes made, but no one's paid a price. Someone has to pay a price or this will happen again. That's where we are.
Well, it's true. And nobody that has done, nobody in the ATF, nobody in the FBI has paid the price at all. Nobody was disciplined. Even when it was told in congressional hearings that, you know, the ATF had truly fumbled it. But nobody even got their hand slapped.
No, that's government, that's God, and will not, you know, they don't make...
Well, if I can interject it, the federal government had no business there to start with.
Is it not obvious that this could have been handled a different way?
A good example of that is FBI Director Sessions, who wanted to personally go there and negotiate. And he was refused access to his jet. And later on, his wife said, here's what she said. This is a quote. Alice Sessions, former FBI director's wife, quote, they were not about to let this standoff in Waco be negotiated again, because it was an opportunity for Floyd Clark, and this was the deputy FBI director, and company to show that they were the FBI capable of handling the standoff and coming out winning in this kind of incident with military kind of tactics. It was a, quote, paramilitary organization. So she said that they didn't want this negotiated. That's why her husband was refused to go there and personally negotiate with Koresh and the people inside the church.
Who could have been so high, there's not very many, that could have told him he can't come to the field?
The answer is pretty clear, because special weapons and tactics, which is actually, we call them Delta Force, but Mm-hmm. Their real name is Special Weapons and Tactics. And when some high level, either ATF or BATF, FBI, I'm sorry, were questioned, you know, was Delta Force there? They said no, but they were hiding behind semantics because Delta Force is not really that's not the official name. It's the Special Weapons and Tactics, and only the president can have them deployed. Only the president.
Well, that opens up another sticky wicket, doesn't it? We'll be right back, gentlemen. And we're back, and we're talking Waco. Guys, this is a short segment. Then we'll have a long break and a long segment. So, what do you want to talk about for like
I messed up.
A couple minutes?
I messed up, Aaron. I'm sorry. I messed up. Actually, the official name for Delta Force is Combat Applications Group. The other thing is SWAT.
Okay.
Okay? Combat
okay.
Application Group. But
okay.
It is authorized by the president. Okay.
I'm going to give a list, Aaron, that I want these guys to might make a note of. I want them to pick which ones they want to answer. If they want to answer them all, that's great. You guys ready for a list?
Go ahead.
All right. Linda Thompson. Not yet. I don't want to answer each one. I'm going to give you the list. Linda Thompson's involvement with information. The helicopter that was FLIR videoed shooting almost straight down into the roof. You mentioned shooting other areas, but how about that one? Also, number three here, some Arkansas troopers that had been personal guards of Clinton involved in this operation, which will be a fun discussion, maybe. And the Waco judge, a judge on this Waco thing that had to flee into Central America. I'm just going to put that one, maybe the one you don't know about, and I thought maybe I'd throw that one out there to see if you knew. But those are four topics that are near and dear to my heart, and I thought maybe you guys might want to tackle those after the top of the hour. Linda Thompson, the FLIR video shooting into the roof. I think it was four Arkansas troopers signed to the operation, and a judge on this Waco deal that had to flee for his life. So this will be interesting to see what you guys come up with here. Aaron, how much time have we got? Can I rant for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead. You got a couple minutes. Go ahead.
I don't know how these guys felt. I was old enough to not have to worry about being 8 years old.
Really, Doc?
But I got one question that I'd like for before break. Do you see this as a run-up of a failed operation at Ruby Ridge? Do you see it as that kind of thing?
A failed operation?
The Ruby Ridge attack failed.
Randy Weaver?
Because a lot of people don't know this, but Bo Gright did a citizen's arrest. And if he hadn't done that, they were planning on dropping incendiary on the Weaver cabin, the Weaver house. A helicopter was about to take off with a bladder full of flammable liquid. And Bo Gright went there, made a citizen's arrest, and because there was a perimeter that he would not have been allowed to cross. And he put the document under a rock on the bridge and said, you know, this is a citizen's arrest. There's the document. I'm going up, and I'm going to negotiate with Randy Weaver. And it's not the way they wanted that to end at all.
So what I'm saying, though, is since that didn't go too well in the plans of the federal government, do you see Waco as a follow-up operation to kind of go and get done what they didn't get done at Randy Weaver, at the Randy Weaver situation?
To show who's boss, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think what I'm saying is, don't you think they were trying to accomplish a goal that kind of went haywire with Randy Weaver, like you say, but it didn't work out. So they plotted again, and up came Waco. I think they are connected in that they are part of an agenda. The first agenda or attempt failed. I mean, the guy settled out of court. He should have gone to court and made precedent. He got $3 million. Now,
hey, right. It was Jerry Spence was a great attorney in his defense. And it was settled out of court for a big sum.
Right. And so we had, you know, the federal government was probably grumbling from, well, that didn't go over so well. We aren't going to get any gun control out of that one, or whatever their, you know, agenda was. Do you see Waco then as, well, let's try this? And so they followed it up with the Waco incident. What's your thoughts?
They don't accept the loss, right? And they have to win.
At all cost. That's mm-hmm. right. Gentlemen, we've got a long break. We'll be up for a long segment. So I will see you all on the other side. Welcome back to the Truth Traveler. We have Doc Waterman, thewatermanfiles.com. We have Phil Hudock, hudock.info. Also, Philip Hudock on YouTube. And we have Gene Stelnecker, and we're discussing Waco. And, Doc, you gave us a list. Gentlemen, have we reached a vote?
I checked it twice. what kind of prize do we get? That's my question.
The prize is always truth. Truth, Phil, truth.
Truth, okay. Very good. I would like to tackle the Arkansas troopers because it was rather dangerous to be one of Bill Clinton's bodyguards. Okay, they tended to get Arkansas-ed.
Very good, Phil, very good. You're right.
And four of the BATF members that were killed were Bill Clinton bodyguards, and of course Bill Clinton abused women, raped women. I don't know why Hillary stuck with him. I guess they're two of a kind. But it was very dangerous, and I think they have multiple plans, just like when Oklahoma City Murrah building happened, the records from Waco were in the Murrah building, the federal building. So, you know, they destroy their, they cover their tracks in their future, in the future things that they do. They have multiple purposes. But another thing that this ties into, and that is, there was a Texas Ranger who was having a big problem, and the Texas Rangers were having a problem with the BATF and the FBI, and then, you know, Delta Force. And so he said, I need someone to talk to in Washington. And so the administration appointed a point man, and guess who that was? It was Vince Foster, okay? And Vince Foster supposedly committed suicide 90 days later, but under very strange circumstances because there was no blood and you know, those kind of things. He was found, I believe, in, Mercy Park. But, and then Kenneth Starr testified that the White House cited privilege in 1993 after Vince Foster's death to keep park officials from reviewing documents in Vince Foster's office the days after his tragic death. And it turns out Hillary had her chief of staff, whose name was Maggie Williams, remove documents, and it was known that there was a file that Vince Foster had. He was very upset with what happened at Waco, and there was a file that was removed and was never found, and it turned out Hillary Clinton had files removed from his office after his death. So they mess with crime scenes on a pretty regular basis, actually.
Okay, so like Doc just, and you just totally blew me out of the water, because, you know, shut up, Doc. I'll knock you out later. Okay, here's the thing. Okay, I didn't know any part of this, Doc. And Phil,
well, I'm trying.
And Gene.
I'm trying.
I know you're trying.
I'm typing as fast as I can.
I know. Well, here's the. We've got to get into this more because this.
Guys,
I don't even know what to say. I've got to just spit it out because the listener's going to be confused, like I was.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
so, if you watch the video, especially Waco the Beginning, you're going to hear in this video documentary at the beginning of the siege where there were four ATF agents, quote-unquote ATF agents, murdered, right? So they're pretending to be all miffed off at the Branch Davidians for killing these ATF agents. Am I right, Doc?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now what you're saying is that those four ATF agents were really Arkansas troopers.
Right.
That through the White House via the Clintons, they were actually Arkansas-ed at Waco.
Uh-huh.
To cover up what they knew, not only about the drug running, but also about Oklahoma?
Let me give you another example. This will blow your mind.
Well, this is enough. Holy cow, my brain's spinning.
Let's take 9/11. Let's take 9/11, and there was a man by the name of, I believe it was John O'Neill. I believe his first name was John. But he was having, he was high up in the administration. He was a cabinet-level person. And the president was having trouble with him. Well, his first day on his new assignment was 9/11 at the World Trade Center.
Wow, that was handy, wasn't it?
Yes. I think he got buried.
Wow. They just do things with multiple reasons and multiple...
Of course. They take opportunity. They know it's going to happen, so they make all these arrangements ahead of time.
They're parasites.
Right. Now, they've got to have somebody in the field to manage the situation, so there's always somebody aware of what's about ready to happen. Do you want to hear how it happened? Guys, can you explain how those troopers got killed, or do you want me to?
What I'd like to know is how did those troopers end up...
Well,
they claimed that they were ATF agents. How'd that happen?
Here's what I saw early on, and it was strange, and that was, in one of the videos, there were four men who were up on the roof, and they go through a window.
They go up a ladder, right?
They go up a ladder. They go through. They bust out a window. They go through a window, and then you see another agent throw. It looked like a grenade or a flashbang. I don't know what it was, but he threw it inside, and I'm thinking, you guys just went in there.
Right.
Well, what I had to laugh at was the retarded ATF agent, the dude that couldn't tear the curtain off. But anyway, that's just me.
I remember that, yes.
But, so these four guys, in fact, the very first guy that went up was the one that knew what was going to happen. And so the first guy that went in was the only guy that came out. So you know how that works?
Yes, and I didn't know anything about this except that when I did see that, I thought that didn't look right. I knew there was something wrong with that picture, and that's exactly what happened.
So these guys, all of them were the troopers. They had an assignment, and they put all four of these guys on the same one. I assume that the troopers felt comfortable together, but as the first guy went in... And then the next guy went in the window. Then the next guy went in the window. Well, by golly, all of a sudden, the only guy that came back out of the window was the first guy that went in. It's real easy to get somebody who's, crawling through a window, and you know he's coming in, and they're not worried about having anything happen because, golly, the guy that went in before is a friendly, right, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
So what these guys... were, like he said, Aaron, they were just witnesses to all kinds of stuff. And, of course, we've already interviewed Chip Tatum. And he was the one that was bringing the medevac, the medical coolers, into Little Rock, Arkansas. And, you know, Dr. Who? Do you remember who picked up the containers? He wasn't a doctor.
No.
He was
I can't remember
sponsor.
His name, but he wasn't a doctor. No.
And all of these guys that were doing all this and hauling it out of the airplane was full of all these drugs just for a party. Most of that stuff, of course, had been delivered for money, but, they took a few for their parties. And the guys that were guarding them moving this stuff around were these four troopers. Now, like Chip, when you're given an assignment that's illegal, that's a loose cannon. That's a possible loose lip. So what do you do to loose lips?
You sink them.
That's right. You get Arkansas-ed, particularly if they're from Arkansas, see? Isn't that
wow.
just... That's one
that's
of the
That's a whole
other
layer.
Yeah, that's just a subplot of the whole thing. And now we have... do either one of you know Linda Thompson?
Wait a minute, Doc. Before you ask that, wait a minute. Can you back up just for a second? Because I'll forget.
Okay.
The guy that came back out of that window and went down the ladder,
mm-hmm.
you said was the friendly. He was the one that was in on it. Did he actually kill the troopers himself?
Yeah, they come in.
He just capped them right in there and climbed out the window, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. Now ask about Linda Thompson.
Are you okay? Well, anyway, guys,
I'm fine.
Do you know Linda? Do you know about Linda Thompson? You know,
okay.
Linda
do black helicopters ring a bell?
I've never seen one. I didn't think they really existed.
He's he's
sorry,
talking
Doc.
About Linda. He knows about Linda. Then
I know.
What did Linda have to do with the video evidence? Do you know anything about that?
No, I can't say I do.
Okay. Linda Thompson, as far as I know, I know she was an attorney, met with a particular group of people that you and I might call patriots. They were militia.
Mm-hmm.
And asked for protection because she was carrying around the original copy from a source that got her information that was quite a bit more comprehensive than we've ever seen, apparently, of the FLIR videos. And she was seeking protection because they were after her. Now, have you any information? Well, obviously you've heard of her, but a lot of people are still trying to find out where she's like disappeared. I mean, she was around that time, and then ever since then, nobody knows where she went. Maybe some of the listeners would know. But apparently, she's got quite a bit of other video footage. And in that video footage was the helicopter, FLIR video. And it was very obvious, and because it was so close to the roof of the buildings, and the angle of the guns was straight down, and they were shooting through the roof. I mean, they were blindly shooting into a building full of people. They could have been hitting children.
Full of babies.
Mm-hmm. And she had this and was trying to get copies made, and she was literally scared out of her head about it and was asking for protection and so forth. So let's get to, do you guys know about the judge that's related to the Waco deal that was running for his life?
I just know that the judge...
Well, let's hold it at the judge. Hold it right there at the judge. I don't want to lose this.
The judge.
It's the judge. The judge. Here comes the judge. Okay, we'll be right back, guys. And we're back, gentlemen, and here comes the judge. Okay, Doc.
Guys, go ahead if you got some info.
I would only guess, and that would be that the judge of the survivors, he should have been on the run for his life after he directed a guilty verdict. But that's just a guess.
That's not the same one. There was a judge that had incriminating evidence on the federal government, and he was attempting to be a whistleblower on this entire operation, but he wasn't getting enough traction, and they attempted to kill him, and he had to flee down to Central America. I only know that because I met him, but... he was even kind of worried about me when I was introduced to him by a friendly that he knew. I never saw or heard of him again, but he had evidence. And that evidence got handed over to a friend that I had. And then not too long after that, he made a trip into Mexico, ended up getting cancer, and dying, and I don't know what all he had. But I didn't know if you knew of a judge that had tried to do some kind of whistleblowing.
No, actually, I didn't. Was it a Texas judge?
Yes. Texas federal judge at that.
Wow. Well, you know, fast-acting cancer, it can come on pretty quick.
Oh, it came on extremely fast. Extremely fast.
Yeah. Funny how that
okay,
happens.
Let's go to one that we need to make people aware of. Tell us about Lon Horiuchi.
Yes, Lon Horiuchi was the sniper who shot Vicki Weaver's wife while she was in the doorway of their cabin, and she was holding a baby, shot right between the eyes by Lon Horiuchi, who was charged with manslaughter, but it never went to trial. And then at Waco, he was in, I think it was they had three sniper nests. One was in an abandoned house, and Lon Horiuchi was the head of that sniper team. I think it was sniper position B. Supposedly, they didn't shoot any from these sniper positions. However, after the event, they found a casing and then later found three more casings in that building. So they shot at something. I don't know if they were hunting elk.
If they're professional snipers, my question has to be, why would they leave their casings?
They probably missed some. You know, casings fly. And
yeah.
Quite often I've gone to the range and not found all the casings that I thought I should have. I think that's it. Plus, you know, they're sloppy and they don't figure they're, you know, hey, he beat the rap before.
Right.
Probably not
right.
Too worried about it.
He had high ranking help.
Yes.
There you go.
Wasn't there an attempt by some of these people to surrender and it just didn't work out?
I hadn't heard that. Tell us about it.
No, I think there was, yes.
Let's not unzip that one.
Okay.
Was there anybody that lived in through this that you know of?
Lived through the fire?
Lived through the whole event. Any
yes.
Branch Davidians that lived
oh, yeah,
through it?
Oh, yeah. A man by the name of Doyle is quite often in the documentaries, and a good friend of mine who's actually the person who filed the writ of habeas corpus on behalf of Thomas.
Okay.
Was near Waco when that happened, and later he went down and met with Mr. Doyle. He had lost a lot of skin with the fire. There were people who amazingly lived through that, just like, you know, the Hindenburg. I was surprised anyone lived through that.
What happened to them? Did they get arrested, jailed? Tell us about that.
Well, they were tried for, there were two charges, and they both involved conspiracy to commit murder. One was conspiracy to commit murder, and I think the other was just a murder charge. And, the jury found them innocent, but the judge directed a verdict where all but two of the survivors got 40 years in prison.
Jeez.
And they had already been released. Some of them were actually at the airport leaving the country because some of them were foreigners.
Wow.
They were.
Well, hold that thought
abducted.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got kidnapped again. Okay, we'll be right back. We're discussing Waco. What were we talking about right before the break? My head's still spinning.
I think what we ought to do now is these guys might have some things that they haven't said yet they'd like to share that they want to talk about. You guys have anything in mind you'd like to share with us?
Gene, you have anything?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, there is something I'd like to bring up. It shows in the video, in the documentaries that the journalists and photojournalists who were on the scene at the beginning were attacked by agents for getting information that, you know, getting footage that they didn't want. That's when you get the real truth is before they set up the filtering apparatus and move the press and the media to wherever they want them to have wherever they want them to view from, you see. And it's interesting because Ramsey Clark makes a statement in the Waco video. He was the Attorney General for the Carter administration, and he says, quote, "I was Attorney General when the Freedom of Information Act was passed, and the government hated the Freedom of Information Act. They hated me for pressing for it because they don't want to be questioned about what they do. They don't want to have to explain what they do. And yet, if you want to be a free society, if you want to have justice, if you want to avoid a police state, you better know what your government does, and you better insist on a right to know what your government does." And that's one of the things that got Thomas into trouble with the establishment, and that's because he was requesting FOIA documents. He was using FOIA, Freedom of Information requests, to get documents that the government didn't want him to get. For instance, we found out that in West Virginia, the state of West Virginia, the official name, there are actually four of them. And how you spell a name is very important. And so I think that's one of the reasons why when the government had a chance to punish Thomas because of marijuana use, which he was actually using medicinally, because the pharmaceuticals that he was taking were, the side effects alone would kill you.
Right.
You know, so what did they do? You know, they said, well, you know, just like in Waco, you know, they had these different ideas of what they could charge him with. Well, they just knew that, you know, they could use that, abduct him. He's a bad person using drugs, you know. Don't even have an arrest warrant because we're like God. We can do what we want, and we all protect each other. We all cover for each other, and they put him in solitary confinement for 5 months and thought that would break him, but it didn't break him. It just made him stronger.
Right. And, it made him more angry, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they, you know, we make the best enemies money can buy all over the world. Think about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think we need to look at the past. We need to look what the government's capable of, what they actually did. And as Ramsey Clark said, you know, we have to know what they're doing because they work for us. And if we don't, then what George Washington said, they're a dangerous servant that'll be like fire. And in the case of Waco, quite often there were comments made, well, you better buy fire insurance, you know.
Right.
And I remember there was one video scene where there's a man in some type of a fighting machine, and he says, "I'm a mean killing machine," you know. We don't want these people unchecked. We don't want them getting away with murder. And that's what they did.
Well, one thing that got to me was they had on Waco, the beginning, they had the actual phone calls between the, what's it called? Not a facilitator. The
negotiator.
That's it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The negotiator and some of the Branch Davidians. And every time they would kind of be getting somewhere, the ATF would do the opposite. For example, they're going to leave the power on, and then they turned the power off. They weren't going to do, and then one guy even tried, they were doing their psychological maneuvers on the Davidians, and One guy in the news thing said, no, I don't even know what that is. Well, that was a lie. He sure as heck does know what that is, the psychological torture. Everything they said was a lie. But the one Branch Davidian, and I can't remember his name, he actually said on that call, he said, look, I know you're getting your orders from a lot higher up the food chain.
He was right.
He was very right.
Yeah, that was run from Washington. And of course that's why Sessions actually, I think, you know, I think his intentions were right. And of course they knew what his intentions were, and he wasn't part of that decision making group, I don't think.
Well, they didn't want to negotiate. That's what I got out of this. They wanted them to go down in flames. They wanted every single one of those people dead.
Yes, they did.
Whether they were babies or old people.
That's
and
why
they had to burn the evidence.
That's why they called it Operation Showtime.
Yeah.
They had to.
And then that one guy, I can't remember which, not Kavanaugh, it's the other guy, kind of took over kind of toward the end of the siege. And when he was testifying, he said, they talked about when the fire had started. And, of course, that was a vicious fire after all of the gas had been sprayed in there. He said, well, it was my decision to not allow the fire department to come in because I was afraid that they would get shot. And I thought, really? This fire, excuse me, is burning so hot and is so out of control. I don't think anybody inside that church, that building, any part of it was going to be shooting anybody. I thought that was the stupidest thing, but how many people believed it?
Right, how very true. And there was about a 40... It was one of the windiest days they'd ever had. And they supposedly said that these Branch Davidians were talking about setting fire to the place, so why would you pick the windiest day, tell the fire department not to show up that day, and, you know, bust holes in the upwind side of the building, so it would, the wind, you know, the air just went right through it. Once the fire started, it was blown by the wind to consume the rest of the church, not compound, the church. And, you know, they didn't want any survivors whatsoever. I'm kind of surprised as many survived as did.
You know, I know these critters lie a lot. And that's hard enough to deal with. But when you actually see them on tape in front of Congress, absolutely, totally lying, it still infuriates me. We didn't fire one shot. Really? Really? Could have fooled me.
Well, and one of my favorite people to dislike, I'll not use hate, but I could, and that's Chuckie Schumer. And he absolutely turns my stomach. And he says, you know, we can't have demonizing of the federal government. And he makes all these definitive statements that we know they started the fire, and we know. And he just, he's...
Because they wanted to commit suicide,
yeah.
Phil.
Yeah, I call him a zigot. It's kind of a combination of his two agendas. You know.
There you go. Well, and then you had Biden. Biden jumped right in there, too, during those hearings.
I don't know if he's a zig or a git, so I think he at least is the first part, for sure. Well, in fact, he admits he is, so.
Well, there you go. I don't know. It was terrible, the way they lie.
The thing that we have all, I think can come to the conclusion of is that we're very thankful we don't get all the government we pay for, because they are kind of lazy. There are a few very aggressive, evil people that just do not let up. And it's coming from the same organizations, because it's not people that continue to bring up, like, the gun passage and the gun laws. And there are these think tanks that actually write this stuff up, send it in to the congressman, pre-written, and say, here, endorse it. It's all put together for you. And we have AIPAC constantly paying them to try and get our guns year after year after year, and it's absolutely ad nauseum.
It's day after day after day. They've sped this up so much, it's ridiculous.
Well, anymore, if you do not sign their contracts to support Israel first, you're going to have trouble. And you might even have trouble getting into the to work, I mean, into Congress. Look at what happened to some of these Congresswomen that didn't sign those contracts. We have a rogue government, completely out of control. And, you know, if you stop and think about it, he's talking about the Clinton administration. So look how long it's been just from this event. And it was way before then. So, guys...
And the Clintons are still in the picture.
Yeah. So where do you see this going? Kind of give us your idea here of where we're headed, and how is this going to affect us in the future?
Well, before I do that, I want to quiz you, Doc.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love it.
Who was the number two man in the Justice Department under the shaky Reno? Who was the number two man who popped up later?
I have no idea.
You mean... Oh, Attorney General-wise?
Yes. Number two, he was the Assistant Attorney General.
After Janet?
Well, no, he was the assistant when Janet was the Attorney General. He was the assistant during Waco.
He's the one that took over when she went to do her speech?
How about Eric Holder? Eric Holder.
That's right. The gun guy, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Funny how that works, isn't it? Good Lord. It's crazy. We'll be right back. We've had Phil Hudog, Gene Stelmaker, and Doc Waterman. We've been discussing Waco, and I have just a pesky little point. Okay, I'm going to let you guys take over. People like Thomas, when he was first kidnapped and incarcerated, he got in trouble for growing a plant. He was growing a plant, okay? Now, and he was incarcerated. Now he's in trouble again. But these things... that do these things like Waco, like the Clintons, like the Holders, like the Renos, and the list is long, they get by with it. Is there something wrong here in America, maybe?
Fortunately, there is judgment in the hereafter, and they won't
escape
that. They won't escape that. And, you know, Gene, Thomas, and I, we worked a plan. I think it was a pretty ingenious plan, and I'm not saying we've abandoned the plan, but we're certainly, didn't hope it would take this turn. But the world is, this country and the world are sliding into the abyss. You know, it's an orchestrated collapse, and there are those that want the collapse. They figure they can... they'll have their little retreat someplace. And, you know, to be honest with you, I have to continue doing what I believe is right, because as the book of James says, to know to do right and do it not, to him it is sin. And we are going to be, there is going to be a payday coming. And we'll be judged, each of us, by what we've done or what we haven't done. And that's what sets my course. I'm sure Gene would say the same thing.
Gene, do you have a comment?
No, I would say about the same as Phil says. We're on the edge of falling off into the abyss. I mean, it could happen any day. The Pope has already made his grand appearance and set everybody straight what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it.
That
so there's really nothing left but to enforce what he wants done.
I think we can fall into the abyss pretty quick, too. Doc, what's your opinion? Because I know you have one.
I see this whole event... of Waco being a stepping stone to the ultimate goal. They tried Waco to do something. Didn't go over. They regrouped, had Waco. It got a little bit. They regrouped. They did the Murrah building, the Oklahoma City bombing. Got a lot out of that. Said, let's rev it up. Went to New York, did a big thing, got a lot out of that. They've got one more left. And the one that has to keep getting bigger, guys.
Yeah.
You cannot psychologically move the people where you want them to go if you give them less of an event. So the what do you think the next event's going to be? I know what it is. It's going to be war on our shores. And they're going to tell us the answer to all of our war problems, of course, is guess what?
Control.
Control. Total control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and a lot of dead Americans.
We just got a report that came from a meeting, a very important meeting, asking military, what is collapse like in the U.S.? And the answer was unanimous. It's 30 to 90 million people dead. And guess how soon?
I already know, so I'll shut up. I already know.
No, go ahead. Tell us.
30 days.
30 days. That's what a collapse can do without firing a shot. I'm not talking about, you know, civil war.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about martial law shooting at everybody. Just a collapse. And that threat of death is going to be mixed in with whatever else they can do to scare everybody into complete submission. And that day is coming soon, I think. I do know this. There's going to be some surgical strikes from heaven.
Right on. Eventually. I can go with that. Gentlemen, we are out of time. We need to do this again. Maybe we need to go through Ruby Ridge and 911 and everything else. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We will talk to you all later. Have a great evening. Listeners, have a super weekend.